Okay. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Circle Up. I am here with Allison Vest, my co-host, and I am Kyra Condi.
Did you forget who you were here with?
I was going to say, I'm Kyra Condi, but then I didn't know how to segue into you are Allison Vest.
If anybody's confused, I am Allison Vest.
That's true, and I'm Kyra Condi, and we are your hosts, as per usual. And so, welcome to episode 19.
Wow, 19 episodes. Crazy.
19 episodes.
Today, we're going to do something a little bit maybe different than our usual episode, but we're going to do some who's more likely to questions that we found on the internet, just to maybe let you guys know a little bit more about us and our dynamic and our friendship, and then we're going to follow it up with some frequently asked questions from you guys, or just some questions that we got asked that we found interesting. So maybe a little bit more discombobulated than normal, but hopefully it'll be entertaining.
Yeah, and hopefully you can get to know us a little bit better throughout the process. So let's get into it.
So here's what we did. We looked up who's more likely to and found some most likely to questions on womenshealthmag.com. And I think maybe we'll just alternate picking
asking
one.
Asking him? Yeah, okay.
So you go first.
Okay, who is most likely to get blocked by a celebrity on social media?
I kind of feel like me.
I was gonna say Allison for sure. I don't know why either. Actually, fun fact, both of us are pretty into pop culture and read a lot of gossip magazines and stuff.
I think it's also one of those things that when you click on one of those on Instagram, you just get all of them.
That's true.
And then it's hard to get out.
Yeah, so you get to see who's dating who, you get to see all these things,
all the drama.
I'm also team Selena, whereas Allison is team Haley, and so.
So, you know, there you go.
Anyway.
For all the pop culture fans.
For the small overlap of climbers and pop culture fans.
If you do not follow Justin Bieber's life, that will make no sense.
Nope, not at all.
Okay, who's most likely to join a cult?
I'm gonna say you.
Like you.
Oh! Really, me?
Yeah. You're just so persuaded by marketing.
By marketing, okay.
I would say that's like a staple in a cult.
I'm pretty persuaded by marketing, but not by people.
It's true. So it depends on how good the cult's marketing is.
Yeah, if they had really great ads on Instagram.
Yeah, if they were just really aggressive and banked on people just not wanting to say no, then probably me.
Yes, that's true. I can see you accidentally getting swept along a
little bit.
Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
Okay, who's most likely to hide a zombie bite?
Hide?
Allison.
Yeah, me.
Yeah. It's going to be.
Yeah, me. I don't know why either, to be honest.
On that one? Well, I'm also the most likely to... I would die quicker in a zombie apocalypse for sure.
Hide a zombie bite is a hard one because I feel like you would just turn into a zombie and so...
Well, you would be in denial about being bit, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Okay, these ones are work appropriate, most likely questions.
Okay. Who's most likely to have a new hairstyle the next time you see them?
Well, that's got to be me.
That's got to be Kyra.
Yep.
Honestly, the answer would have been different like 4 years ago.
That's true. I'd had the same hairstyle for forever.
Yeah. I feel like that's mostly just because of recent times. You've switched it up a lot, but.
Yeah. I'm on my way back to growing my hair out long.
I know. Kyra said she just said that she misses her long hair.
I know. Well, so I had it obviously really long for a super long time. And then, you know, it was a big part of my like brand image, even having like long double braids.
So you didn't want to change it before the Olympics?
Didn't want to change it before the Olympics. And I really liked that like signature look, but I always wanted to do something different with it. And so that's why I chopped it off and dyed it blonde. And then it's just a slow process to go back from anything that you do that's not dramatic. So
that's true.
I'm trying to enjoy that process instead of having it be very annoying. Who is most likely to quit and host a reality dating series?
3, 2, 1.
Allison.
Yeah.
No, 100%. We actually, fun fact, did try out to host a show.
We did.
That will remain unnamed. But
so it was fun to try.
Yeah, and see that a little bit of that process because it's totally different.
Yeah.
We also have tried out for a few other reality TV shows.
Yeah, let us know if you think we should try out for The Amazing Race again.
Yeah, because we thought we would actually kill it on there.
I think we got close in that casting process, but we just
I feel like we were close.
Yeah, it felt like we were one of the
I think
down
there was
the wire.
Another group of like two athletes.
Yeah,
and they can't
were better than us.
Load it. They can't load it with too many double athletes cuz we're just good at stuff, you know.
It's true, we're too good.
Well, these ones are, we have to skip this section because...
Oh, those are not safe for work.
These are not safe for work questions.
This one's for friends, so that's nice.
Okay, who is most likely to run a marathon?
Three, two, one.
Kyra. Allison?
Oh!
Really?
Run?
I can't.
Okay, neither.
Okay, fun fact, at one of the World Cups this year, me and Chloe Koskoy, who's also on the U.S. team, went around and asked almost every female athlete who we were friends with if isolation, so like isolation is the area where you have to go before the competition starts, was 10 miles away and you had, so 10 miles is 16 kilometers, and you had, I think we said an hour to get there.
I would not make it.
Would you make it?
No.
And the other question was, would you try? And almost everybody said, some people said no.
Wouldn't try.
Straight up wouldn't try. Natalia was like, there'd be no point. I'm not going to make it.
Out of respect, honestly.
Brooke was like, I'm probably not making it, but I'm going to try. And then we changed the question to up the ante a little bit and said that it was like world championships, semifinals, ISO, like Olympic spot is on the line. How hard do you try?
I mean, I feel like I could try as hard as I possibly could, and I still am 100% sure I would not make it.
Okay, then we changed the question because everybody was pretty sure they could not make it. Because I think that's having to run, I think that's the question we asked, because it was about 9-minute miles for 10 miles, which I just don't think I could do physically. No. Then we changed the question, and instead of that, it's every athlete gets dropped off 10 miles away. And you have to be in the top 20 of all the athletes.
That I think I could do.
Yeah, everybody said yes. Nobody said no. Everyone's like, if it's a race, I got it.
Wow, fantastic line of questioning.
I know. You fit everybody else's answers as well.
Oh, well, so, I thought I was unique.
So. No, well, apparently all of us who compete at a high level have at least some amount of the same competitive aspects.
Okay.
Okay, so neither of us will run a marathon.
That's okay. Who is more likely to own their own farm?
Okay, 3, 2, 1, Kyra. Allison. Oh, what?
I thought you were going to be like a vet.
I do want to be a vet, but I don't know.
I don't want cows. That sounds like so much work.
Cows sound like a lot. I thought like chickens. Maybe you would get chickens.
Oh, does that count? I would get chickens.
And like goats. Not a goat.
I think I'd draw the line at goats.
Apparently they smell really bad, I've heard.
Okay, so neither. These have not been very interesting so far, but we'll do our best. Oh, for couples.
These are for couples.
I think
we could do these.
Yeah, we're basically a couple.
Who is most likely to apologize first? 3, 2, 1, me.
Kyra?
Yeah. Honestly, in the time that we lived together, got on in very few fights.
Yeah, like maybe
two.
Yeah, I was going to say one. One? Yeah. So, okay. Who is more likely to splurge on expensive items?
All right. 3, 2, 1,
Kyra.
Me. Yep.
Yep.
Fun fact, I'm actually buying a house right now.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's exciting.
Kyra, spray wall garage content coming at you soon.
Yeah, hopefully. The plan is to make a really, really sick spray wall in my garage. So that was the main inspiration for wanting to buy a house. Right. Okay, let's
Who's
do like...
Who's more likely to make it to the Olympics?
Oh.
You already did.
I did. Okay, we'll do like two more and then we'll switch to rock climbing content for you guys. Okay, who is most likely to buy a motorcycle? 3, 2, 1,
me.
Allison.
Yeah. Kyra has like you, if you ask Kyra about her opinions of motorcycles, like be prepared for the most aggressive anti-motorcycle answer you can possibly
think
of.
I don't want any of my friends to ride motorcycles. I don't want to have to worry about them.
It's fair. I mean, I might be most likely to buy a motorcycle, but I'm still not gonna.
Yeah, because I would not let her, but.
That's true, actually, even if I wanted to. Kyra would come slash my tires.
Exactly. Who is most likely to sleep through a natural disaster?
Easy.
3, 2, 1,
you.
Me. Yeah. Except for I'm actually very afraid of thunder. So
that one would maybe get you.
There was actually a time right when Allison moved in.
The earthquake.
There was an earthquake that we both woke up to. I woke up to the earthquake in Salt Lake. But then there was another time that there was this insane windstorm.
Oh, yeah,
and
I remember
in the morning being like, Allison, I was like kind of scared last night. I kind of wanted to come wake you up. And she said the same thing. And then we were like, wow, that's really funny. And then we went outside and every tree in Salt Lake had fallen down, it seemed like. It was insane.
I know. We kind of thought we were being crazy. And then we walked outside and we were like, oh, actually, that was kind of scary.
Yeah, like maybe that was reasonable that we were scared last night. But my like little kid instinct of like going into my parents' bedroom was like,
Allison, the wind is scary.
It was scaring me a lot. Okay. Hopefully that was fun.
Had fun.
We got most of those right, I think, too.
As long as I had fun, it was worth it.
Yeah.
I had fun. Yesterday, I plucked my eyebrows for the first time ever in my whole life.
Your first time?
Yeah.
Ever?
Ever.
Dude, since seventh grade.
I think my whole face looks better.
I mean, I'm a big fan of plugging eyebrows, but I started in seventh grade. I had a unibrow.
I'm at least partially blonde, I think, is, oh, like, yeah. You just can't, you know.
I would sneak into my mom's bathroom and use her tweezers.
Without telling her, because you were too awkward.
Because I was too awkward, yeah.
That's a classic.
That is a classic.
Well, I was too awkward to do it until I was 28 years old, so.
Well, they look great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, now we're going to go more into some climbing content.
So, now we're going to move into our most interesting or frequently asked questions that we've gotten on Instagram. Some they are climbing related now.
And some are more serious than others, though, still.
So, the first one is the best way to gain finger strength.
Okay, I'm going to throw the ball into your court in this one, Allison.
Well, first thing I would say is I think if you're just getting into trying to improve your finger strength, the best way to do it is probably to climb on holds that require more finger strength, crimpier holds, smaller holds, and to just do the kinds of climbs that are more finger intensive and harder for you. I think that's, in general, the best way to start to improve your finger strength.
Yeah, dynamic loading, like, yeah. On actual climbs.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then as far as hangboarding, which is, I think, the most generally accepted finger training
device.
Yeah. There's a ton of apps out there and things that have really easy beginner hangboard workouts. We both have used the MyClimb app for our fingerboarding workouts before. They have some really good, easy beginner ones from a bunch of different pro climbers. And so, yeah, I think that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I agree, hangboarding is probably then, like, the most regimented way to gain finger strength.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously just tons of different ways you can do it. And then the question is, like, what do you want from it? Do you want more endurance so that you can, like, hang on crimps for a longer time? Then that type of hangboard workout is different. That's, like, where you kind of do more of the repeaters of, like, hanging for a longer period and then resting for a longer period. And then repeating it. Yep. And then there's also then just heavy loading, which is a totally different thing and gets more of that, like, strength and recruitment and white tissue.
Exactly. But all of those different workouts you can find somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, and just make sure that you are doing something that's appropriate for your level.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I've had people try and, like, even some hangboard content I post, they try and do it. And then they're like, oh, I almost tweaked a finger. I'm like, well, you know, you got to figure out, you have to, like, make it what's right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of that, the next question is, how do you decide whether or not to push through pain in your training?
That's a great question that I've gotten actually a ton, which is why we wanted to answer this. For me, I think I've done a really good job of mostly avoiding injuries in general, other than this annoying shoulder thing that I have going on right now, but it's not an injury. So this is a great example. I go off of whether or not it feels like it's injurious or if it just feels like sore. And there's a difference. Like, even when people have popped a pulley, like, they've known that it felt sore, at least people I know,
weird
beforehand, and then they kept climbing. Whereas if I felt that way, I would just stop. You know, that's important, knowing when you should stop.
And I think for me, it's all about just, like, time, too. I think in a specific session, if I do something acute and something hurts, I usually stop. Like, if I do a move and my shoulder hurts all of a sudden, like, I feel that shoulder while I'm doing that specific move, and it's, like, a moment that I know is when I hurt it, I for sure stop. And then usually you can tell by the end of the day or the next day whether it's, like,
something bad or not.
If something's just starting to hurt, I usually really pay attention to if it's getting better or worse. Like, if I wake up the next morning and it's better and it just is sore for a day, and then just the next day it's better and then better and then better, then obviously I think that's just, sometimes it's just part of training. It's
yeah.
like having things that hurt or are sore, or, I mean, maybe you did push a little too far, but it's not like an injury. But anything that I have that feels like it's getting worse or the same, I will baby.
Yeah.
For sure.
I would say it's also important to know what positions are tweaky or injurious. Like, for example, if your shoulder is rotated inwards, it usually takes all the loading off of the muscles in the back, so all the rotator cuffs, and that's how you end up dislocating your shoulder.
Yeah.
And so, like, knowing to avoid those positions, yeah. especially if you're weak in that position, is, like,
yeah.
something you can do
yeah.
and avoid getting into those positions in the first place. Same thing with, like, really tweaky pockets.
Yeah.
Like, I have never had a finger injury, I think mostly because if something feels tweaky, I let go.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I mean, that's a fair reflex. I also think people want, like, an easy answer to that question, and there just isn't one necessarily. And I think if you have, I mean, I know going to a specialist is expensive, especially here in the US. My opinion is it's always worth it. Like, the worst case scenario is you're going to pay them a bunch of money to tell you that you're fine, but then at least you know you're fine. And so, yeah. I mean, my main advice whenever I get asked this question, because we both get asked it a lot individually and also on mm-hmm. the podcast Instagram, but it's always worth it to pay the money to go to a physio, because the risk is that you're going to have an injury that gets worse and then maybe potentially becomes like chronic, which is not what you want.
That's a great point. I was talking about my shoulder, and I actually just got it imaged with an MRI, which I was actually really nervous to do because I have the metal in my back.
Oh my gosh, Kyra's back heated up. Rods heated up in the MRI.
They warned me that that was like a possibility, but it only happened at the very end, and it was like super nerve-wracking.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They didn't like burn or anything, but it was nice. It got me that peace of mind that like I knew it wasn't something, or I was nearly positive that it wasn't something wrong with the shoulder joint itself, like the labrum. I was pretty sure it was muscular and honestly probably related to my scoliosis and how my muscles are stretched on that mm-hmm. side. But having that peace of mind, like you were just talking about, was really nice to know that it's not anything in my shoulder, that I'm okay to keep going. And that's another thing that doctors and other professionals can tell you, is whether you should rest or whether you can keep climbing on it. And that's nice to know because it hurts, but it's fine to climb on.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. I mean, otherwise you're just doing stuff in the dark and it might be fine, but it also might not. And so if you're willing to take that risk, then that's one thing. But in my experience, I found it's just better to know.
All right. What's our next question?
What is your favorite comp memory? Let's do both for yourself and of watching other people.
Okay. My favorite comp memory for myself was probably making my first World Cup final.
I remember that.
Yeah, with Allison, actually. It was during our China trip that we talked about in a previous episode. But I think that's probably my favorite memory, just because it was something I had dreamed of for such a long time. And then on top of that, that same season, I made finals in Vail, at the World Cup in Vail, which was like the first World Cup I had ever gone to. I always wanted to climb in front of that finals crowd. And so probably the combo of those two finals that year in 2018.
My favorite comp memory, I think, was definitely winning my first bouldering nationals.
I remember that too.
Yeah, there you go. I think partially just because, I mean, now looking back, I didn't know how good I had it, just because I was the underdog, so there was like no pressure and nobody expected me to win. And then I won anyway, so that was just a really cool feeling. But also it was just one of the most, like, I think it was like one of the more liberating comp experiences, and I didn't realize it at the time, but just having like less pressure because nobody expects you to win was really nice.
Did you feel like you had less pressure on yourself then too?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think when you have like, I mean, I hadn't won a nationals before, so when you don't have like the results to back anything up, like it sort of feels like it's all to play for. And I didn't really realize until the next year competing at nationals, and I like showed up in ISO and was like, oh, I'm like the defending champion
instead of the
underdog. It was horrible. It was like, well, the next year was one of the worst comps I've ever had because of that, for sure. I just wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Best comp experience of
watching. I think I have a couple that I'm thinking of, and it's hard to choose, so I'm going to choose two.
Okay.
One of them has to be John Brosler getting a 3 on the 10-meter speed wall
at nationals.
And beating like the defending world champion, who was a Russian guy who was competing at our nationals, and like we were all holding hands, like watching and just screaming. I have this hilarious video where like it's like an absurd like playground scream for how excited I was watching John. I think a lot of my favorite like just watching comp memories is honestly speed climbing, just because it's so exciting.
Yeah,
watching Emma qualify for the Olympics at World Champs is up there. That was also incredible. But my other one would probably be watching Jesse Grupper win his first World Cup or title in Briançon last year.
Yeah.
That showed me on the live stream, apparently, and I was like sobbing. And apparently, like, everybody who was like Jesse's family messaged him and was like, I was fine until I saw
so
Kyra.
Cute.
And I was like, oh my God. That's really funny. But that was like, I think just watching how hard he works and then seeing it pay off and win a World Cup, like, was just amazing.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite World Cup moments, because of the amount of just respect I had for it was in Vail, not gonna remember the year, but Shauna Coxie came out in semifinals. This is just, I think this is one of my, just, I don't know why this one has always stayed with me, but the first boulder was a slab, and literally everybody was doing this slab. Everybody. It was very easy, but for whatever reason, it didn't suit her style.
Okay.
And so she came up onto the boulder, tried it twice, decided she just wasn't going to do it. So she left with like a minute and a half left. And in the round, it was looking like you had to do the slab because the other three were so hard. And so she went back into ISO and we were like, oh man, crazy. Shauna's like not going to make finals. That's wild. And then she came out and just smashed the last three boulders. Like was one of the only ones to do some of them. So I think that's one of my favorites just because it was a good reminder of like she knew what she like was
her,
capable
yeah,
of.
Her confidence in that
her
moment.
Her confidence was just, yeah.
And that is
just,
cool.
She was not rattled at all. It was crazy. And so, yeah, I think that's one of my favorite ones for sure.
I've been amazed by her confidence before too.
That's
and it's
so
and,
impressive.
That's a memory I had because I was listening to music a lot when I would climb and I would use it to actually
tune out
everything so I wouldn't know if somebody topped or not. And I think it was Shauna who told me that she actually uses that information to be like, okay, I need to top this one.
Yeah.
Versus like, okay. So she probably maybe was seeing that people weren't topping the next three and was like, yeah, I got them.
I got it.
Like, I
yeah.
got it. They're on the steep. Like, yeah. That's my strength, which is cool.
Okay. Next one is, how are the relationships between climbers from different teams at World Cups? Or like, what are the relationships like, I guess?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of close friendships across different countries. I think obviously the Europeans know each other a lot better just because of the European Cups and training at each other's gyms a lot more. Like a lot of people end up in Innsbruck and are all there at the same time. But that's true of all of us. Like we end up at Innsbruck a lot and then get to hang out with all the teams. I would say definitely the English-speaking teams tend to migrate towards each other, whereas like the Spanish-speaking teams tend to migrate.
Because of convenience?
Honestly, yeah. And then like Austrians, Germans, because of speaking same languages as well. So like I'm really close friends with like Campbell Harrison from Australia. He's awesome if you don't follow him also. And yeah, like that's like I think how I would say it's typically the demographic ends up being. But,
yeah, for sure.
Like, but most people get along and are quite good friends and we always end up going out after the comps together.
Yeah, definitely. I mean the teams that some of the teams that keep to themselves more is like I think largely language barrier. Like
definitely.
The Japanese team tends to keep to themselves a little bit more, but a lot of them don't speak very good English.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Korean team.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I think people want there to be bad blood just for the drama, but there's really not.
There's not a ton, no. Yeah. Nothing dramatic, at least.
Nothing dramatic, for sure. Okay, how do you relax your mind before a comp or a send?
Do you want to take this one first? Like pre-send of... Show Your Scars, which was the V14 Allison did. Like, what did you do? Did you have, like, a pre-ritual?
I think I realized which, actually, you have a similar story. But I think I've realized I need to, like, I need to, like, calm myself down more first before amping myself up. Like, there's obviously a balance. But I think I have this tendency to get into, like, a nervous, jittery stress hype.
Yeah.
And so... Like, I do whatever it is, deep breathing or, like, paying attention to my surroundings or something to, like, center myself and then, like, change that breathing pattern to get more psyched to, like, try hard and pull on. But, like, doing both, I've started to find is what's helpful. Because if I don't do either and I already feel amped up, then it's usually, like, nervous, jittery amped and not the kind of place.
Do you use music at all when you're outside or not really?
I definitely do. I have sent a few boulders like wearing headphones.
While wearing headphones? Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm. I did Pagan Poetry in the spring, low, wearing headphones. And I definitely had music playing when I was on Show Your Scars. It's like by itself up on a hill. So I think I did not, I was just playing it.
Yeah, playing it instead of headphones.
I was like the only one anywhere near that boulder.
No, I definitely agree that it's important for me to calm down more than to get amped.
Yeah.
Like, so I could not listen to, like, techno or, like, intense hip-hop music before getting on the wall because I, like, already am at such a high level of, like, engagement that I need to, like, calm down. So I tend to listen to opera music. I don't know if I've mentioned that on here before, but I have, like, my, like, epic comp playlist of music that sounds really cool and really intense, like I'm doing something important, kind of like a music, like a movie score.
Soundtrack, yeah.
Like a soundtrack. And that's what I found works, like, super well for me in comps because it also... Like I was saying earlier, it doesn't block out the sound, like which is what I tried to do before. But that's like what I try and do. And then I've also started doing this thing called box breathing, which is, I think, really helpful. And it's like three parts. One is that you count to four. So one, two, three, four. And then as you count to four, you picture drawing a box. Like each corner is the number. So you go from one to two, three to four, and then back to one. And then as you draw that box in your mind, you breathe in for that four count. Then you hold it for the four count again while drawing the box. And then you let it out during that four count. And you do it like three times. And you it takes so much focus that you like can't think about anything else. It makes the jitters go away. And you just feel like pretty calm and relaxed afterwards.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
How do you progress without a coach?
Ooh.
I think this is an interesting one because, I mean, I've had a coach as an adult and as a youth athlete, which is different than Kyra. I think it's about being open to what other people around you are saying. Like, I think it's important to get feedback from somewhere. And if you're not being around other people, I think it's about being really aware of where your strengths and weaknesses lie and being able to like self-reflect somehow. So whether that's like filming yourself on a boulder and trying to think about why you can't do a certain move and like what the missing link is. Like, I think you have to be self-reflective somehow. So if it's not going to be a coach telling you what to do, I think you have to be able to be honest with yourself and think about what you need to work on.
Yeah, and just using the resources that you have available. So like if you don't have the possibility of getting a coach, when you do climb with somebody else, see what they're doing. And if they're stronger than you at things, like what are they doing that makes them stronger than you at that? Or like if they're doing a move that you can't do, yeah, evaluating it and figuring out why they're doing it. Is it because they're pulling harder? Is it because their hips are in a different position? I think that's a great way to kind of like evaluate, like you were saying, since you maybe don't have somebody there to point out exactly what's happening. And video is a great tool. Like,
yeah,
video everything.
For sure.
I have like 30,000 videos on my phone.
Somebody asked if we spot each other in the gym.
No, but I have asked for a spot like at the training center before when I've been
so tall.
Yeah, it's like when gyms are really tall, I definitely, and I'm having trouble committing to something, I every once in a while will ask like, hey, can you just like stand on the side of the pad to make sure I don't fall off, but I don't want that you like touching me.
Yeah, I've definitely asked for a power spot.
And a power before. Spot. Yeah. I'm a big fan of power spots, actually. I think they can be a great way to learn movement and also gain confidence in a move that feels impossible. Because sometimes it's like, wow, I only took like 5 pounds off of you there. And you're like, wow, really? Like,
yeah.
Felt like you were helping a lot. And
yeah,
then all of a sudden you do the move.
Okay, Kara, is it a dab if your ponytail touches the ground is the next question.
As a former long-haired climber, I'm going to say no, it's not a dab. But
here's what I'm going to say is also no, but it would hurt me internally.
What about the chalk bag dab?
That would also hurt me.
And the shirt dab?
It would just hurt me.
It would hurt you.
Yeah.
Mm.
I have absolutely taken my shirt off and just worn a sports bra if it's close to the ground.
Really?
It mentally hurts me.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I don't think it's a dab, but I wouldn't want my hair dragging on the ground. So I would probably put it in a bun.
Because like, what is it gonna, like, it's not like there's a rod in there. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't help you. It's just dragging.
Oh my God. Who was it? I was talking to some boy once who was like, does it hurt when they were touching the end of my hair? And I was like, no.
Yeah, it's what is this, Avatar?
I was like, it's dead at the end. I can't feel that. It was really funny.
Nerve endings
I was
in your
like,
hair.
Can you feel your hair when it's touched? I was like, it's the same.
Oh, that is really funny.
I can't remember who that was, though. It was really funny.
Okay, here's an interesting one. This one is from our biggest fan, Kyra Condie. What would it take for you to win a World Cup right this moment? Like, what would have to be set on the wall?
Okay, and we were talking specifically lead climbing. In order for me to win a lead World Cup right now in my current form, which this was not my best lead World Cup year, it just wasn't aligning, so I didn't make any semifinals. So that's to preface this.
That's where this came
that's
from.
Where, that's and I asked this to a couple different people, actually, which was pretty fun. I think for me to win a World Cup, I would have to have 4 benchmark V9 moonboard climbs.
Stacked.
Stacked in a row. It was like literally 4 moon boards on top of each other, and they're climbs I knew and that I've done before.
No rest.
And like doing all of them in a row, yeah.
I agree.
I think that would be my best chance at winning a World Cup.
I think I would say that mine would have to be middle Beastmaker edges that have been removed from the hangboard, and everybody has to wear a 25-pound weight vest.
At least,
if not 40.
Other answers included a wall of only pockets. And you had to find the right way through.
Okay.
That was Sean McCall's answer.
I like it.
And then Chloe Koskoy's answer was a huge dino followed by like 60 moves of mini jugs to pump out the boulderers and then followed by another huge dino.
Wow.
So those are some of the more entertaining answers.
Okay, we have two left. The first one is, what is in your Crag bag?
I have way too many shoes.
Yeah, same.
Way too many shoes that I bring to the gym every day, and I wear the same shoe of my bag every day. So I don't know why I bring five pairs of shoes when I only use one.
I also have a lot of bands.
Oh, tons of different bands.
I have too many bands.
I have like 8 leg bands, which I use maybe once every 3 weeks. Because I'm supposed to use them, but I forget.
I have all the different weights. I only use the same one.
No, always the same one. The red one, always. Except for I lost my red band, actually.
Oh, no.
And I've been using the green.
Ooh.
Don't know how I feel about it.
Yucky.
I always have to have a snack at the gym. Because if I get hungry mid-session, I'm done. I, like, mentally, physically done.
Both Kyra and I bond over the fact that we are not the best versions of ourselves when hungry.
No.
I would say, we said at the beginning of this episode we maybe argued one time, and we did, it's true, but our closest arguments has for sure been when we're both hungry.
Yeah, or like upset about like climbing or something.
Yeah,
the combo of hungry and at the gym, like not good.
And both at the same time. That didn't happen that often, but when it did, it was rough.
I'm actually a really big fan of those, like the pro bars that have that like 20 grams of protein.
Yeah.
I think those are like some of the best gym snacks because they're pretty easy to eat for being 20 grams of protein, and they actually like pretty much fill you up, and then you can make it to your next meal pretty easily. What else? I have
a big chalk bag and a little chalk bag.
Big bag, yep. And then also a tension block for hangboarding. Liquid chalk. I always have liquid chalk too.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I'm too sweaty.
I have the tension shoe spray in there too to clean my shoes.
Oh, and tape.
And tape.
And fingernail clippers.
Oh, yep. Got that too.
Yep.
I currently have KT tape because of my thumb tendonitis.
Allison got thumb tendonitis from crocheting too much.
For a whole day I crocheted, and now it's been 3 weeks and I still have thumb tendonitis. So I had to order a thumb brace, and all of the marketing was people 75 or older.
So be careful out there.
Yeah, to all the yarn enthusiasts, watch yourselves.
Again, our small overlap of yarn enthusiasts and climbers.
Hey, they're out there.
I'm sure they are.
I posted that on my story and said, anybody else get a crocheting injury or just me? And I got like, I think 50 replies.
Wow.
Of people being like, you're not alone.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Maybe it's not.
No, it's
maybe
a
it's
thing.
Not a small overlap.
I know. It's a thing. Okay, the last one is, how do you beat jet lag? Which this is an interesting question because Kyra is a fantastic sleeper and I am not.
Yeah, sleeping I think is one of my superpowers. I actually, when I was talking to my old sports psych, she was a sleep specialist and had done a bunch of research on sleep. And so she gave me this thing that goes under your mattress and it tracks your sleep. And they have an app through the USOPC that evaluates it and all this. And mine was like spectacular. She was like worried I was like borderline narcoleptic.
Oh my gosh. Like, I mean, I would be. We were literally, there was one time Kyra and I were in China in a cab, like in this insanely busy urban Chinese city. We're like swerving all through traffic. It was our first time in China for a competition together. Like, I was actively stressed out that we were not going where we were supposed to be going. And I look over and Kyra's asleep in the back of this cab in the middle of urban city China.
Yeah, cars put me to sleep, man.
I like don't know where we're going. I'm all stressed. Kyra's asleep. But in a more serious answer, I definitely have always struggled with jet lag. And when I was competing, I mean, I care less now just because if I'm going somewhere, it's usually not for a comp. But when I was competing and it was really important to be
not tired.
Acclimatized?
Yeah.
To be on the time zone that you're competing in. I downloaded this app called Time Shifter, and it helps you with jet lag. That's like what it's for. So it'll tell you how to slowly start shifting your schedule towards the place that you're going to be going. Usually it's like a week or a week and a half before you leave. And it'll say when you're not supposed to look at your phone because of the light and when you're supposed to go to bed. And
tells you to wear sunglasses.
Tells you to wear sunglasses at night when you, when it's going to be nighttime where you're going. Anyway, all these things. And then you can input your flight schedule in it too. So it'll tell you when to sleep on the plane.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I also had to train myself to use an eye mask so that I could wear that on the plane. I actually, on the way to Africa, bought a fancy neck pillow on Amazon that attaches to the headrest.
And how was it?
It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, because then it holds your head up so you don't like slouch to the side because you're attached to the back of the seat. It probably looks super stupid. I think like my cheeks were like pressed up into my eyes, but I slept great.
That's sick. I'm going to have to look into that. I feel like I'm pretty good at sleeping on planes though, if I want to, unless I get too distracted by the movies, because I also love movies.
Yeah, it's true.
That's
a battle.
The main problem, actually.
Yeah.
I would say my biggest advice, or the biggest thing actually, same from that same sports psych who I used to work with, was that I would say that I would panic if I like couldn't sleep the night before the comp or something because of jet lag or because of nerves or whatever. And so she just really stressed getting a lot of sleep and kind of, she's called it your sleep bank. And so like saving up your sleep bank before going, instead of like sometimes people are tempted to like wake up really early, which is not what you said to do, but like they're tempted to like try and get on schedule that way. But then that actually just makes you like sleep a lot less. Yeah. And so then you're like losing that backup sleep bank that you had. And then, so it's actually better to go in really well rested, and then having that one night of bad sleep before doesn't the comp matter. Doesn't matter. And so that's usually what I try to focus on. And then my other thing that me and Allison just actually realized, we're doing the exact same thing. Like yesterday we realized this. I have Audible downloaded on my phone, and I used to listen to the Harry Potter books religiously to like fall asleep throughout my entire childhood. I had all seven, and I would literally just listen to each one as I went to bed each night and kind of find where I was and like keep catch back up the next night. So now like I'm forgetting his name.
Harry Potter.
No, the other guy. The guy reads it. Jim Dale. Oh. Jim Dale's voice just lulls me. Harry Potter. Jim Dale's voice lulls me to sleep. And so I can like listen to the Harry Potter books on the plane and or sleep. And like, and then that way I'm not watching something, but I'm still kind of entertained if I'm awake, but not entertained enough to like stay awake because I've already know, I know how it ends.
Yeah.
And that way I can, and I found that works really well so that I'm not looking at my phone if I wake up with jet lag too. So like listening to something that's not music that kind of like lulls you back to sleep has been really helpful.
Fun fact, I've always really liked rewatching stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always prefer watching movies and things I've already seen.
Yep.
But apparently that's like an anxiety thing.
I've learned that. I heard
you know
that.
The ending.
Yeah, I heard that actually.
And you know you like it.
Allison watched a lot of Criminal Minds while we lived together.
I did. It was actually probably not great. I had some pretty messed up dreams.
I was going to say, I don't know if that one's good for anxiety or not.
No, but I also know what happens in every episode.
No, the opening scene would happen and Allison would be like, oh, he's the murderer. Or like, oh, they're going to die this way and then this is going to be the ending. And I was like, how do you remember this? There's like 90 episodes.
I mean, there's like 300 episodes.
Oh, man.
They have like 12 seasons of that show.
All right. Well, hopefully this was an interesting episode for you guys, and we went a little long because I guess we were having a lot of fun. But if you ever want us to do another one of these and we didn't get to a question that you were dying to know, please send them in, and we'll try to get to them in another episode.
Maybe 2 years from now.
Yeah, depending. All right.
See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.